There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 56. Tonight, talking some more baseball prospects, especially the big Shohei Ohtani news. And in order to do that, bringing on at Prospect Jesus. His name is Ralph Lifshitz. You can find him on the internet working for Razzball at razzball.com. Ralph, how are we doing?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. How's it going?
It's going good. Going good. I saw your article on Ohtani the other day, the morning after the big news came out. Really, really awesome stuff. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get going on the prospect news.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Ralph Lifshitz. As you mentioned, recently changed my Twitter handle from Ralph Lifshitz, which no one could spell, to Prospect Jesus, because I am here to save your fantasy team. That's what I do. I help people out with fantasy slants on prospects, because there is a lot of prospect coverage out there that's really, really good from sites like Baseball America or Baseball Prospectus, et cetera, et cetera. But they're really baseball focused. So in their rankings and everything they do and really cover, there's defense factored in, intangibles, leadership. We don't really care about that for our fantasy teams over at Razzball. So what I'm really focusing on primarily things, so it's why I'm typically very hitter heavy in terms of the players that I focus on. And just sort of my approach with pitching, and I'm sure we'll get into over the course of this episode. So I try to cover, you know, the minor leagues during the season, sort of do a similar update to what my boss over there, Gray Albright, does 5 days a week, where he pretty much updates every single game, newsmakers, you know what the stat lines were, anything that's noteworthy. I try to do the same with a slant on, you know, dynasty, what players you really should be paying attention to long-term. And once in a while, I get to do something cool, like write about Shohei Ohtani. So, as you mentioned, I mean, that post was a lot of fun to write. I think I was going to write maybe like 800 or like 1,000 words, something really quick, just to sort of go over the player that he is, you know, as a pitcher. And obviously, the interesting wrinkle in the whole thing is that he's also like an all-star hitter as well. And just sort of go over, you know, what isn't, you know, his skill set is and how that might play. So much interesting interesting angles and ways to break down the story that I end up writing like 1,600-1,700 words. So I go into everything from the signing bonuses and how that breaks down. What angle do you want me to go to on Ohtani? Because honestly, I could probably talk about Ohtani for like 2 hours. I'm that sort of enamored with this story.
Well, that's why I asked you to come on, because I love prospects in general, and we'll get into some other ones, but I am very, very curious to get all the Ohtani news I can. Your article, like you said, you covered it all from just the basics all the way to his hitting, his pitching, what he does, his pitches, the rankings, you know, as if you're a scout, to his, potential for fantasy viability in the future. So much to go over. So we're going to kind of hit a little bit on all of it. But like you mentioned, he's an all-star Cy Young caliber pitcher, and he's also a phenomenal all-star caliber hitter. He's like the current closest thing to Babe Ruth we'll see. We've seen, you know, Rick Ankiel back in the day tried to make it happen. We have a couple kids that were drafted in the recent draft, and Brendan McKay and Hunter Green, which we'll talk about, who are two-way athletes. But Ohtani is just kind of a totally different thing. So let's just go first. Tell us about his pitching skills, what we can expect from Ohtani as a pitcher.
Yeah, I think, when you're talking about what he primarily should be focused on, and I'll just go out there and say, as excited as I am for him as a hitter, if I owned a major league team that was making an investment in Ohtani, I would definitely want him just to focus on pitching. I mean, this guy has been sort of comped as a top 10 pitcher, a young Justin Verlander type. And what I mean is his arsenal is very similar. He works off of a high 90s to 100 mile per hour fastball. He can get into triple digits easy, touches 102 on the gun consistently. I mean, so he really has, you know, a serious fastball with some sink to it and some life and some bite. So there's movement on it as well. It's not a straight, you know, 100 miles an hour. So it really comes at you. He also mixes that in with, you know, a 70 grade, you know, on the 70, the 20 to 80 grade scale, you know, when it comes to scouting. So 80 is as high as it goes. And no one ever sees an 80. He has a 70 grade splitter. I mean, this guy's splitter is as good as you see in terms of what the movement is. It's a total wipeout pitch, absolute put out pitch. I mean, this guy is going to rack up the K's as he has over in Japan. That pitch has sort of been likened to Masahiro Tanaka, who, you know, who obviously is a fellow Japanese pitcher, but, you know, is also a heavy splitter guy, and his splitter is about as nasty as there is. And they say that Ohtani's is even better than that. He mixes in a slider and a cutter. He sort of has two variations on his slider, really. One slider is sort of your classic sweeping, nasty slider. And then he also mixes in more of a cut fastball. So it has, I'll say, you know, less break on it and is a little bit harder and straighter, obviously, than the sweeping slider. Mixes in a curve and then I guess a change. I haven't seen much in the change. Most of the highlight videos that I've watched, most of them focus on the fastball, the slider, the cutter, and then obviously that really nasty splitter. So in terms of the pitcher, I mean, I do the pitcher rankings over at Razzball as well. This guy to me is easy, a top 20 starter. It's not out of the question to think he could be considered a top five guy this time next year if he goes out and has, like, just a really stellar campaign. He's only 23, so there's you know, some long-term prospects with this guy as well that kind of makes him unique and really exciting because he's so well-established, you know, as a pitcher. That I think he would probably garner $200 million in the open market, but because of some of the bonus pool stuff and the recent CBA, he's actually limited in terms of what his earning power can be. He can only actually be paid a bonus up to $10.1 million. There's only a handful of teams that can offer that, so the difference between $2 or $3 million with this guy, I don't think is going to be big. I think it's really going to be about him dictating what he wants to do, especially if he does want to also hit in terms of, hit in addition to pitching.
A couple questions on the pitching part. You mentioned his 70 grade splitter. You mentioned Tanaka. For those that can remember back, Hideo Nomo had one of the filthiest splitters one can think of. And another, again, you know, national relative in Japan. How would you compare his splitter to Nomo's?
You know, I would have to. It's Ohtani's is so fresh in my mind that I feel like it's better. But I've seen, you know, Nomo's against major league hitting for a long time, and for stretches, you know, Nomo was obviously phenomenal. So I would say they probably grade out pretty equally. Obviously, there's something to be imagined with Ohtani's.
Okay. You wrote about how he's yet to exceed 160 innings. He's 23 years old. Is there in Japan, they don't pitch as often as they do in the bigs, one would say, because the games per week and everything. Is there any concern about, like, a pitch count or him actually going every 5 days?
Yeah, see, I think that's an interesting wrinkle because the thing with the Ham Fighters is supposedly they took it easy on this guy because, you know, that was his team back in Japan. I know it's a great name, 80-grade name there in the Ham Fighters. But supposedly, in comparison to how they handled Darvish, who I think also was on the Ham Fighters as well before he, you know, he came over here to the States, they threw him for a lot of innings. I mean, him, Tanaka, and Kenta Maeda all had 200 to 300 plus inning seasons. They also were an all-star hitter. So I think that might have factored into it a little bit. I think it was also them looking at him as an investment, trying to keep this guy fresh because they knew if they put too many innings on his arm and he did get injured, that, you know, it would obviously hurt his long-term value and how quickly they could get paid. So it's funny to see. You know, I wonder how much the hitting will factor into how it will a team that he's on, you know, implement a six-man rotation. Will they skip him at certain times? If he hits, you know, how does that wear him down? Does that limit his innings ultimately? That's a big question with Ohtani. Is this guy going to exceed 200 innings ever? And if he hits, I think it's hard to imagine that he would.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, speaking of his hitting, you know, he throws right-handed, he's filthy, and he's got – and then he hits left-handed with insane power for a Japanese player. We haven't seen that before. And we've seen, like you already mentioned, Maeda and Tanaka and Darvish. They've come over. We've seen pitchers do well in the bigs from Japan. Hitters outside of Ichiro, we really haven't seen anything consistently that makes you go, okay, they can bring the crop over here. But Ohtani's different. Explain to us his hitting skills and how it could translate to Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I'd say the other guy that was consistent was Hideki Matsui, too. He was obviously excellent. He was a power guy. I think he is more of a solid, like, corner outfield guy that would hit for power and, you know, walk a little bit, strikes out a ton, isn't going to hit for a high batting average. He's got speed, though. And I've heard him comp to, like, a young Curtis Granderson, which I think that seems a little, like you said, with Japanese, you know, players and sort of the track record, that seems a little strong. I wonder if maybe he's more like what Colby Rasmus is, where, yeah, like, you know, he's good in his spots, power, he's got speed, he's got skills, you know, that translate when he has a big game. You sort of look at the box score and go, oh damn, like, you know, Colby Rasmus is, you know, maybe he's better than they're giving him credit for. But I don't know if, you know, he's the kind of guy that really is going to be an all-star over here as a hitter. Maybe I'm wrong. I think he can hit major league pitching, and I think he could be a major league player as a hitter by itself, but I don't think he's a star. He's a superstar when it comes to the pitching side of things. I've seen some contrasting opinions on his power grades. Somebody gave him a 70 grade on his raw power. I've seen like 60 raw power, 55 game power. So he's got pop. And then in terms of his speed, I've seen like 55 to 60 grades in the speed. So he can run, you know, so, and he would steal bases. But would you really want to send your ace pitcher to steal bases, especially if he's sliding head first, you know, with all these finger injuries you've seen with Trout, you know, and numerous other guys? Like, yeah, the last thing I want is, you know, having my ace pitcher being a speed demon on the bases.
Yeah, it would be terrifying. You see all these guys wanting the DH because pitchers can't succeed on the bases as it is. Now, Ohtani's a different case, obviously, but like you said, the last thing you want to do is see your, you know, ace pitcher hurting himself because he's trying to turn a single into a double or something. That would just be horrible. You mentioned the $10 million signing bonus, and only a few teams are qualified there, and that doesn't necessarily mean that's where he's going to go. He might find somewhere else, get some more wrinkles in the deal so he can, you know, hit, you know, arbitration, get an extension or something, work out the details with them. Who are the front runners to get him? I've heard some names, but I wonder who you've been looking at.
Yeah, I think just because a team doesn't hit the 10.1, there's a lot of teams that could hit, like, I think it's 8.7, and I might be off by like a few hundred thousand there, but the Yankees are one of those teams. The Red Sox are one of those teams. I haven't really heard many whispers with the Red Sox. I think the front runner is the New York Yankees. I think they need to make a splash. It's a big market. You know, there seems to be some history there with Japanese players coming over, obviously with Tanaka now, Matsui, you know, some obviously less successful guys like Arabu and Keigawa, but they have a pipeline there. So I think that brand is well established, and they have a need. They have a need for a guy like this. And I think that having, you know, Tanaka alongside him, you know, I don't know if they're friendly or not or anything like that, but I don't know if that would, you know, aid the process a little bit, make it more attractive. I'm not sure. There's certainly a Japanese community there in New York. The other team that's actually been close in tracking him, and I know it's funny because it's another place that a Japanese pitcher signed, but it's Texas. And I think there's a reason for a lot of these same teams being mentioned. And it's because these teams scout heavily over there. and they really do have a presence in that marketplace. And the Rangers have been following and supposedly been nuzzling up to his people for years. They're sort of a dark horse in all this. I think they have the ability to spend 8 point something. They're not a full bonus team, but I could be mistaken on that. I have to double check again. Unfortunately, I didn't commit all the – there's so many teams. There are like 20 teams that could potentially be up to like $8 million. So it's tough to throw them all out there. The other one is the Mariners. I believe the Mariners actually do have the full 10.1 available to them. They obviously have another team with a history of a great Japanese player there in Ichiro, huge Japanese community there in Seattle. That might be sort of a natural one for them. Maybe not a bad landing spot either. An excellent ballpark for him to play in. And a team that he might be able to bully a little bit and say, hey, I want to hit. I don't know if he can do that to the Yankees, and I'm not so sure he will be the Rangers, but I could be mistaken on that. So I think those teams are sort of in the forefront. There's teams with money to spend, like the Phillies, and obviously the Red Sox, like I mentioned, and a couple other players there that, you know, are sort of dark horses on all this. But Dodgers are out of it. They can only spend up to $300,000. And you know, there's a few others, too, the Padres. So it could be really interesting. He could end up in, like, a total dark horse place because he's able to dictate terms. And I think that's another part of this story, another angle that people are sort of ignoring when they're dismissing him as a hitter. If he's coming over here now with these new bonus pool rules, that he's giving up 2 years and a potential payday and entering into the arbitration process, I would guess that he's going to get his way. And that might be why he's doing it, because he's just, I want to, you know, part of it might be, I want to play in North America. I want to play in the best league in the world. We all want to believe that. Another part of it might be like, hey, this is my shot to really do what I want, because if I go over when I'm 25, when the bonus pool rules don't apply to me any longer as an international free agent, teams would maybe pay $200, $300 million, in a big-time deal, especially after next year. And we see, you know, some of the money that, you know, a Trout or Bryce Harper is going to get in the open market. I think it's really going to change things for some of these big-name guys. And 25, he's still young. So as for what teams can do to sort of get around that, I don't know. MLB claims they're going to be, you know, really, you know, strict on this stuff. They're not going to, you know, let somebody hire his mother for, you know, $300 million or something on the payroll and have all the money go to him. Like, I don't know what they necessarily can do. What I've heard is maybe 2 years in after he performs, a team will be able to promise like an opt-in, opt-out, where he'll be able to make, you know, maybe $20 million a year, $23 million a year to avoid arbitration and sort of lock them in. So there was a really interesting piece over on FanGraphs about all the contract side of things, written by, I think it was Dave Cameron, but I could be mistaken, but it was someone that was much smarter than me when it came to the business side of baseball. I'm not going to bother to go into anything besides the bonus pools because I don't know how they could structure contracts 2 years down the road. Like I said, I'm not an agent, so I'm not that smart. But there are some things that teams can do. And I think it's not going to be one of these sort of just, you know, Quagmire from Family Guy in the club, just throw your cash in the air, Moncada, here's $40 million, you know, Louis Robert, hey, here's $30 million. It's not going to be one of those. So it's interesting to see who he picks and why. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so different. Like you said, the other times, you just like a Moncada or a Robert or any of those guys, it's okay, I got the money, come over here, we'll take care of this. Or exactly. in the Japan instance, you know, you have to get the fee that the team has to pick, where, you know, I think it was Dice K was 30 or 40 million, you had to pay the team straight up just to have the chance to negotiate with them, but only the Red Sox could negotiate, so they get to pick where you're going type deal, like you mentioned. That's a big difference, like you said, on this. And it's also interesting having so many teams available, because he will dictate and he does want to hit. He's expressed that a ton. So he's going to definitely, if teams are saying flat out, no, you're not hitting, well, you're going to probably go off to the back burner. The last thing there, what I have heard, a couple things actually, is watch where Yu Darvish ends up, because rumors are Darvish might go back to Texas already. But Darvish is apparently like Otani's idol and they're actually friends and everything. So I could see that being a comfortable landing space. it'll be interesting because I've heard about the after 2 years, they can renegotiate and kind of do like a, okay, we're going to extend you, quote unquote. Now we'll buy out your arbitration years and we'll give you the kind of the deal you were looking for if you perform. So it'll be really interesting to see how that comes to be. Now we mentioned he's a hitter and a pitcher. And in this most recent draft, I mentioned Brendan McKay went to the Rays, Hunter Green to the Reds, two stud pitcher, stud hitters. We've seen McKay actually in the minors this year. And in the minor league playoffs, he actually pitched a gym and the next day had a walk-off, I believe, home run. So he's doing it both. Right now, both teams are saying they're going to kind of play with both angles. How do you see an Ohtani coming on and kids like McKay Green and future kids changing the landscape of baseball?
Yeah, I think McKay has as good a shot as any North American player of pulling this off. And I think the Rays are sort of off the wall enough that they would definitely give something like this consideration. And he's hit pretty well. He's pitched pretty well. I think long term, in terms of his value to a team, real baseball sense, he's more valuable as a left-handed starter and focusing on that. He's got the body for it. He's a big guy, sort of a big burly guy, can take the innings, has quality stuff, throws a lot of strikes, can miss bats, you know, get weak contact. He's sort of just not an ace, but a very solid sort of number two, classic kind of number two starter. As a power guy, I think he would have to focus as a power first baseman. He's going to have to focus on hitting full time. I never think he's going to be a great, but I could be wrong. You know, he's not hitting for a lot of average right now. He's just hitting for some pop. He's got kind of a slow bat. He's, you know, he doesn't have really quick bat speed. Really, most of his value as a hitter is off of just, you know, sheer sort of country strength. And that can play for a while in the minors. And I think that, you know, maybe they do sort of limit his innings by having him, you know, hit a little bit. And so far, you know, he's looked good both ways at times. As for Hunter Green, I don't see it happening with Hunter Green. I think they're just trying to limit this kid because he's so young and he's throwing, you know, 100 plus miles an hour. And that's got to concern you a little bit. You know, I'm one of these guys that I'd rather my starter through like 95, 96 with really good control and like kind of nasty stuff, like had a nasty fastball like that than these 100 mile per hour cannons. They worry me. All these guys get injured. I mean, look at Noah Syndergaard, you know, guys, you know, the picture of health, muscles on top of muscles, keeps on adding velocity onto his fastball, but he keeps on getting hurt. And I think arms just sometimes aren't meant to go that fast. So that worries me a little bit. If I was the Reds, I would be like, yeah, you're hitting some, you know, you're a National League player. I'm okay with you, you know, having some games at DH in this league and, you know, hitting when you're on the mound. And, you know, maybe you get a couple of games a month at shortstop. I would not be playing this kid in the field because I wouldn't want him to have some sort of catastrophic shoulder injury. And then I got to play him as a shortstop because long-term his stuff is about as nasty as it comes. And this is the kind of player that within 2 years could potentially, you know, as a starter, if all things go as good as they can, really be an impact player at like 20 in the major leagues. I really think he has that kind of stuff, as does, you know, another guy from this draft, Mackenzie Gore, but he's not as exciting because he doesn't hit.
Yeah, Mackenzie Gore might be the best pitcher in the draft. It was very impressive stuff with him. Last question on Ohtani. Fantasy impact. You mentioned he's basically a top 20, if not better, pitcher. His bat plays with some power and speed combo. We've actually talked on Twitter about it. I think the best case scenario is in a player pool, you have Ohtani's pitcher, Ohtani hitter. There's two Ohtanis on your league. That's, I think, the best approach to it. How would you – like approach him in a redraft league or a dynasty even?
Yeah, I think, you know, in a dynasty, like I said, he's a top five starter. He's a top asset. I mean, he's somebody that's going to go in the top two or three rounds, I would imagine. If you're starting up like a 15-team dynasty right now, I would definitely figure he goes in the top 30 to 45 guys. In a redraft league, like a 12-team league, I think people will be a little bit more tempered, but it depends. If he comes over, he's in the right market, and you know, he just looks awesome in spring training. His draft day stock will go up to like the fourth round, probably even one of those drafts. But I think safely now he's probably somewhere 75 to 85, and it wouldn't shock me if people reach on him and really grab him around 50. I don't think I would touch him until 85. This players that happens, you know, a lot where I really like somebody in a draft and I sit him. I love Andrew Benintendi. He's one of my favorite players, one of my favorite prospects I've ever covered. And the only places I grabbed him is where I could get him like between 90 and like 110. And there were a lot of places where people grabbed him like 75th. And I was like, yeah, I'm not touching that. You're probably right, but I'm not necessarily all that aggressive on sort of these unknown commodities, even though I love the minor leagues and cover them extensively, particularly in a redraft. I'm much more cautious with someone like Ohtani.
Oh, that makes a ton of sense. In redrafts, these guys that haven't proven themselves, they're going to have so many more hiccups. Usually they might get sent down. There's way, way more questions involved compared to, you know, like you said, 15, 20 picks earlier. You can get a much more stable commodity. So it makes a ton of sense in that. Let's move on from Ohtani and talk about some other prospects. First, we'll talk about guys that are having an impact this season, some just recently, some overall. And then we'll talk about some future prospects real quick. But we'll kick it off with the big man in New York in pinstripes, Aaron Judge. Amazing first half, put on the show at the Home Run Derby. He struggled in the second half. It looks a lot like his second half of the season last year, almost mirroring it. What should we expect from Aaron Judge in the future?
I think you can expect 30 home runs. I think you can expect a high, you know, on-base percentage, high walk rates. I mean, this guy is still walking like 13-plus percent of the time. I think you can expect a lot of strikeouts. I would hope that he makes some positive, you know, progression, regression. I know I hate when I say positive regression because it doesn't seem to make sense, but it does, technically. Yeah. So I think the batting average, you know, will sort of stabilize. I think he's a 270 hitter. And I think that you will see less strikeouts. This guy has sort of improved the longer he's been at a level when he's been healthy. He's been pretty healthy this season. This is the longest stretch of games he's ever played. I think he's had a really good season. You have to put it in perspective. This guy's a rookie. There's going to be some struggles. Usually after a year or two, guys like this, you know, the strikeout rate goes down a little bit. It stabilizes around 25%. I think ultimately that's what Judge is going to be, is he could be a, you know, perennial 265, a 275, 34 to 50 homer guy with, you know, lots of RBIs, hitting in a good lineup in a good ballpark in New York. So even as a Red Sox fan, I got to say, I do think Aaron Judge long-term is still a good investment. But, you know, he's not going to be number one overall the way he looked the first half of the season. Like, he looked the best player in baseball.
Yeah, he was a freak the first half of the season. Next guy I want to talk about had a massive first half, and he's actually put it together after spending some time on the DL for the Dodgers. Cody Bellinger, I personally feel, is a better long-term commodity because of his power-speed combo than Judge. But what can we look forward to with Bellinger?
Yeah, and I totally agree with you on Bellinger, and it's been that way for quite a while. I ranked Bellinger sixth overall coming into the season, and I had Aaron Judge, actually the lowest I had Judge ranked, at 37th. And I agree, even long-term now, I think Bellinger is a better ball player. I think he's a better hitter. He's got that wild, you know, sort of uppercut swing that he claims he's always had, you know, learned from his father, you know, journeyman Clay Bellinger. And yeah. I love this kid all around. He's a great athlete. He can run a little bit, you know, can play a very solid corner outfield, and he's a gold glove first baseman. And I think he's going to be, you know, sort of the heir apparent to Paul Goldschmidt in terms of the best overall first baseman. I don't think it's going to be next year or the year after they necessarily overtakes him there, but I think he'll grow into a little bit more average. I think he's an easy 40 homer guy. I mean, you consider he missed, you know, more or less a month of the season with the DL time, and then obviously being in the minor leagues for the first month or 3.5 weeks. This guy easy could be at close to 50 home runs if all things go well. So that's him now, as young as he is, and the sky, you know, the sky's the limit with him. It's crazy to think this is a guy that could be perennial 40 to 50 homers every single year, hitting in a pitcher's park at that.
Yeah, and it's crazy because when he first started in the minors, everyone had high hopes for him. He wasn't really the big power guy he is now. It's developed every year. Yeah. So long-term, you're thinking he's a consistent 40 homer, maybe 20 stolen base guy?
Yeah, I think maybe the stolen bases will go down a little bit after that. But I think that, you know, he can certainly steal 15 to 20 bases. And I think that the strikeouts, once again, will stabilize with him. I don't know if he's ever going to be a 300 hitter, but he just makes such good contact that I'm not gonna count him out, because every year he continues to get better and improve as a hitter. You know, ever since he really burst onto the scene in A-ball a few years ago with Rancho.
Okay, here's a guy that has just come on the scene in the last month and a half, and just taken it by storm in Philadelphia. Rhys Hoskins, 18 homers coming in tonight in 37 games, just a monster at the plate. He's hitting it off of some good pitchers at times too. This power, he's from my area in Northern California, where in college he didn't really even have power there. That's why he went to a small state school. What can we expect of Rhys? Can this just balloon into something huge, or is he like one of those prospects when he steps on, he overachieves, then the bigs make adjustments back to him and he might struggle some more?
Yeah, I actually love Rhys Hoskins, and I had him within my top 50 prospects last July of 2016. So I've always believed in him since he sort of made that, you know, early breakout in Reading. And I know it's easy to compare and contrast him with Dylan Cousins, because they both had these great Reading-aided seasons last year. But it was obvious when you look at the underlying stats that Hoskins was for real. This guy is, you know, an easy 10 to 11 to, you know, 12% walk rate guy. He gets on base. He works counts. But he also doesn't strike out. His strikeouts are, you know, typically, you know, below 16, you know, 17 per around there, even lower. This is an elite sort of prospect with a bat. The problem is he's a right-handed hitting first baseman, and prospect lists generally, as I was talking about earlier in the show, discount first baseman. They really discount right-handed hitting first baseman. So I think all those things sort of went against, you know, his favor in terms of his prospect status, but the numbers were always there, and he was phenomenal in Lehigh Valley this year. Really was just the best player in the minors the first few months of the season, and certainly the best player in AAA. And that includes Yoan Moncada and some of the other guys, you know, Devers and some of those guys that have come through AAA before he actually got the call. I've been banging the drum for Hoskins to get called up pretty much since May or June, and there was no reason for them to ride Tommy Joseph as long as they did, or even move Hoskins into the outfield. I thought that was even sort of ridiculous, because he should be their first baseman of the future. Tommy Joseph is a Jag. He's just another guy. I think the underlying skills are there for Hoskins to be a 280, 300 hitter, middle of the order, you know, with a possibility to drive in 100-plus runs. I think this guy is a legitimate middle of the order three hitter every day of the week. I love Hoskins, and I think he's sort of been undersold, and I'm glad that he's come up and just absolutely, you know, demolished major league pitching.
Yeah, it's great to see. And a big point you mentioned there, most power hitters, especially young power hitters, do strike out a ton. And you look at Hoskins last year in bats, 139 strikeouts. This year in minors, 75 and 41. Those are really, really good numbers for a kid his age with the power. You just don't see that every day. So that's a big plus on his side. Plus, he gets to hit in that ballpark. And I agree, there was no reason for him to be in the minors past ever happened. Let's talk about a guy in the American League that's trying to keep pace with Hoskins, just went into Philadelphia and homered in every game, homered again on Monday night. Matt Olson of the Oakland Athletics, 22 homers now on the season, tying McGuire's mark for 65 games. He has 14 in 20 games, which only three rookies have done. This guy's crazy. I talked about him last year when he was in the minors, and he had some injury setbacks. What can we expect from Olson?
I think you can expect Jack Cuss kind of a profile. This guy will hit for power. He's probably better than Jack Cuss, but, you know, he hits for a lot of power. He strikes out. He walks a ton. He has an elite on-base ability and has for a long time. I was really into Olson a few years ago, 2015, 2016. Had an excellent 2014. Where he hit 37 home runs while he was playing in high A in the Cal League. And then he followed it up with sort of an underwhelming season, still walked 17.9% of the time. And then, you know, the dust, you know, the shine was sort of off the rose at that point. Because in 2016, sort of followed it up with another 17 homer year. And it was really underwhelming. And it was funny because I when you watch this guy hit, when you watch him make contact, he looked like somebody who could hit 30 to 40 homers. And he worked counts, he got on base, he did strike out a little bit, but a lot of that had to do with how many pitches he took. And I just think, when you walk in an 18% clip, you're seeing so many pitches, you're going to see some stuff in the black that you take, and you get some strikeouts looking from time to time. And I think that boosts some of the strikeout numbers a little bit, yes. He tapped into the power again this year. I don't know what the adjustment was. I haven't read any comments from him. He had an excellent year in Nashville with a AAA affiliate. Got called up. He's obviously continued to do this. And this is a guy that I was really high on. I had him ranked 54th coming into 2016, coming into 2 years ago. And, that's only four spots behind where I had Alex Bregman ranked. So it just goes to show I was really high in Olson at one point. And I don't even know if I had him in my top 200 most recently, just because I was so like, this guy seems like he's a quad A player. He's never going to get it going. And there's just so many of these redundant sort of guys like Ryan Healy, Olson, Renato Nunez is another one that's he's all bat, no defense. I think Olson ultimately is probably going to push Healy to DH, and I think you're going to see him and fellow rookie Matt Chapman, another nice power bat, probably in the middle of the order for years to come, at least where they're controllable for the A's.
Yeah, it'll be really good to see. Talking about the New York Mets now, Amed Rosario, everyone wondered all year long what's taking forever to bring him up. The Mets just do things different all the time, like between, injuring their players or anything else. You never know what the Mets are going to do. But Amed Rosario finally comes up. He's starting to get it going here the last few weeks. Are we going to get the Amed Rosario that everyone saw in the minors, or kind of a mix of the early starts and the bigs?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a solid player that sort of at the end of the year you look at his stat line and go, wow, he had a better season than I thought he did. And you're going to own him for stretches where he's hot, like he has been recently. And you're going to love him. He's going to steal some bases. He's always going to hit for average. He's never going to kill your team. And he'll hit for more power than I think I probably expected. I think he could hit 15 homers next year. But I think he's going to be a solid player. A lot of his value is going to be tied to hitting at the top of the order. And hopefully scoring a lot of runs, because he's such an efficient base stealer. I don't see him going wild on the bases and stealing 40 bases, even though I think he has the ability to do that. I just don't think he's going to run enough. I think, you could put an expectation on him for next year of like 280 with, 12 to 15 homers, 25 steals. And you got to hope that, like I said, he hits at the top of the order. And the Mets can maybe get some players behind him healthy. An assessment is actually plays like 110 games, not just like 10. And he scores 80 to 100 runs. Because I think a lot of his value, like I said, is going to be tied to counting stats. Because he's not going to drive in a lot. But he will have some power and some speed, some average. Really needs to have those big run numbers, though.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Maybe Dominic Smith's production will help a ton there, too. For the White Sox, they have prospects for days. We will not talk about all of them. But one I do want to bring up is Yoan Moncada from Cuba. We've wanted to see him forever. He's got the call. He came over from the Red Sox in the sale trade, and he's starting to catch fire as well. This guy looks like he has all the tools. He didn't really show it with Boston, but we knew he had it. What can we expect as, like, peak Moncada?
I think peak Moncada will be a 285. If he figures out his pitch recognition, he's obviously been on fire recently. As of Tim Anderson, it seems like everybody, Jose Abreu, everybody in that White Sox lineup. If he can figure out his pitch recognition stuff and really pick up on breaking balls, I still think he struggles with those a little bit. And gets his strikeout rate down to, let's say, 22-23%, which I think is possible. The hit tool is there. I've seen it before firsthand. Witness him here in Portland. I live in Massachusetts, and I do drive to a lot of minor league parks. Portland, Maine isn't too far, so I did see some of his games out there. And, he's got great raw power. He's got good contact. He has plate approach. He's got awesome speed. I think you could be talking about a guy that hits 285, 25 to 30 homers, and, steals 25 bases, 30 bases. I think next year it will be more like 260, 20, 25, 30. I still think he can steal bases, and I think he will hit for more power. You know, maybe I'm high in the power. Maybe it's more like 17 or 18. But he could be a 30-30 guy with a decent average. If he puts it all together, he really has that ability. And I would say that his ceiling is as high as all right now.
Well, yeah, and the way they're building that lineup around him with all the prospects, there's going to be a lot to enjoy in that lineup, so he could really blossom into something special there. Rafael Devers, or Devers, I always screw it up, is starting to play. He came out the box smoking in Boston. He scuffled a bit, but still playing really, really good baseball. Kind of everybody wanted him over Mancada, it seemed like at times. I could be totally wrong there, but that's what I got from some people. What's the long term for Devers? I know they have another big AAA player or third base player in the minors. So you could see Devers maybe go to a different position or something. What are we looking at with Rafael?
Yeah, and I'll say that the other third baseman we're talking about is Michael Chavez. And Michael Chavez is actually going to be heading to the Arizona Fall League, which is like prospect heaven in a month or so over in Arizona and all these backfields. And he's actually going to be working out at first base. So I think they have a plan to move him to first. I think they're going to stick with Devers long term. Now, I another guy that I watched a lot, I saw him in Pawtucket, actually took my kids, I think the day before the 4th of July, up to Hartford, because another close stadium to me, and I saw him and Brendan Rodgers playing. And Devers made contact, I think he was 3-for-5 that day, hit a homer clean out of Dunkin' Donuts Park there in Hartford, which is no easy feat. You know, literally hit it out of the stadium, right down the right field line. Every time this guy makes contact with the ball, it scorches off of his bat, has that other, that different kind of a sound. I think this guy is special. This is a Miguel Cabrera kind of talent. And had I witnessed him, I actually, my top 100 list came out the day that I went to go see him or the day after I went to go see him, my midseason. Had I witnessed him before or I had written that list or finished that list, I would have put him above Moncada. I have him, I think, fantasy-wise, he's a sure thing. He's just a better hitter. Even when he came here to Boston, you know, he's hitting the ball the other way. He's utilizing the monster as well as any left-handed hitter I've seen, you know, for the Red Sox come up and do in a long time. And it's really scary to think they're going to be able to pair him with Benintendi and Mookie Betts and Xander and some of these other players long-term. And I think ultimately that's why they're going to move Chavez to first base, because they want Devers to be the third baseman of the future. And at times, you know, he's inconsistent in the field at third, but he still makes some gorgeous plays out there in the field from time to time. First game in AAA, he actually hit a homer off a longtime lefty specialist. He's a left-handed hitter, Devers. And, you know, lefty on lefty, they put him in there for Syracuse. And like I said, this guy's a 10-year vet. And Devers smokes the ball for the go-ahead homer down the right field line. You know, just another moment where he comes up to AAA and, you know, the moment's not too big for him. And then the next inning, a barehanded stab on the run to throw somebody out at first base to end the inning. So, you know, he'll make some great plays in the field, and I think that will ultimately keep him at third base. You know, what he could be as a hitter, this guy could be 330, 100-plus. Like, he'd be that rare MVP 3 or 4 hitter. I think, you know, better average than Hoskins, but similar raw power and a higher ceiling. So, you know, comparing and contrasting those two corner infield type of guys. Another guy is a middle of the order hitter, but Devers to me seems like the second coming of like Miguel Cabrera.
Well, that's awesome to hear. Yeah, he's been impressive. I liked everything I've seen about him, but those comparisons and that breakdown makes me like him a lot more. We'll talk about, and then we'll go on to the next area, is Walker Buehler of the Dodgers. They've called him up to work out of the bullpen for now. He skyrocketed through their system. This guy's got dynamic stuff. High A, went all the way through it. Now he's up in the bigs. What do we expect from Walker? I'm assuming they want to make him a starter eventually in the bigs, but he's already scuffling a bit in his short time now, which expected a bit. But what do they expect out of Walker Buehler?
Yeah, I think you can expect a player who is at times maddening because his stuff is so good. But it seems that as he's gotten here in the higher levels, AAA, you know, he struggled a little bit too. And they've used him with this whole bullpen experiment. I worry about him a little bit. I worry about what that says about his long-term health, why they're sort of taking this wonky approach to him. Why don't they just shut him down and just, you know, have him go through a full year? He's coming off of, you know, Tommy John. This guy was, you know, an elite starting pitcher in college with an elite program in Vanderbilt. He came back from that surgery. He's been throwing harder than he ever did before. And that's why he's sort of skyrocketed up list because of how good his stuff has been coming back off of the injury. You know, great breaking pitch. You know, he does have some pitchability side of things. Misses a ton of bats. The strikeout numbers are phenomenal, but I just worry that he's not going to be able to sustain it for 7-8 innings. And if you're going to be a great elite ace starting pitcher in this league, you've got to be able to pitch a lot of innings. And for me, as a fan or somebody, you know, who's investing in players for dynasty leagues and fantasy leagues, oh man, I don't know if I really want to get involved with a guy that's got that kind of high upside, that kind of price tag to bring onto your team. And he's got those injury concerns and sort of question marks, you know, with his sort of long-term sustainability. That really worries me with Buehler. The pure stuff is as good as anybody. He's a lot of fun to watch, you know, during his time in Rancho earlier in the year in high A and then in double A Tulsa. I mean, he looked great. I wish they kind of kept him as a starter and just had an innings limit and then shut him down. I don't understand what they're doing. I figured they'd dynamic piece of the bullpen for him down the stretch here in the playoffs. But I always saw it coming, what they're doing, but I'm not sure that I totally understood it from a development standpoint. I think it was the wrong thing to do. And they sort of played similar games with Julio Urias, and we've seen what's happened with him.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of confused. You know, coming off Tommy John, like you said, he's already thrown, you know, almost 88 innings in the minors. He's throwing hard. He looks good. Confidence should be pretty darn high. And you're bringing him up. And I thought they brought him up after the first, but he might have already been on the 40-man. I'm not sure. But I thought they brought him up after the first. They can't even help him in the playoffs. So that's where I was confused even more by the situation. Maybe they just wanted that little bit of experience. I don't know.
There's some moves they could make of like dropping somebody off the 40 man, I think, and he could be eligible actually for the playoff roster, if I'm not mistaken. But I could be wrong in that. I've heard there's some ways to work around that if they wanted to.
It probably is. I could talk prospects for days, and obviously you can as well. But let's move on to a couple others. Guys we haven't seen yet this year that are shooting up through the minors that, you know, like your Judges or your Hoskins, Moncadas, who's going to make an impact next season that we don't even really know yet?
Sure. I think one big name that's on the tip of everybody's tongues, and I would say that he's, at this point, the number one prospect in baseball. I don't think there's many questions to that. Unless you're a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. guy, who I don't think we'll see next year unless things go really well, then maybe see him late September, but probably not, is Ronald Acuna of the Braves. This guy has become sort of the hottest prospect in baseball, sort of best, you know, two-way talent in terms of, you know, phenomenal defensive center fielder, but also a really hyper-talented hitter. Great average, tapping into a ton of power, can steal bases, and the numbers, if you go and you look at them, slash line is great. You know, 20 plus homers. I think he's got 30 or 40 steals at this point. And I think he could do that, you know, in the majors. I don't know how soon it will be. Atlanta's been known to sort of be really aggressive with these guys until they get to AAA, somebody like Ozzie Albies, and then for a full year, you know, like Albies was. I don't want to say that this guy could break camp, but I think he's got the talent to do it. I don't know what the Braves' intentions are, but I do think we'll see him at some point next year. And all bets are off once this guy is up. His minor league numbers compare most favorably. I feel like I'm like the hyperbole hour tonight because I just keep on like comparing these guys to Hall of Famers. But really, his minor league numbers compare most favorably to Mike Trout. And there's very few guys that have sort of done what Acuna's done this year. He will be in the Arizona Fall League as well. So, you know, if you're going to follow along with that as a prospect town, it's worth checking out. And he's played a lot of baseball this year. I think he might have had a September call-up had they not planned on sending him to Arizona, and had he not played off-season ball last year, actually down in Australia. So he's had a really busy full year, and Acuna's been the guy that's just shot up from the back end and off a lot of the mainstream lists to the middle to right to the very top. And you know, he's somebody that I'd even consider stashing in a lot of fantasy leagues. I mean, Acuña is amazing.
Yeah, that everything I've seen on him and the stats, the clips you can watch, this kid is special. And people might say, Mike Trout, you got to be crazy. Ralph's not crazy. The stuff this kid can do, if even like 80% can translate into the bigs, he might not be Trout, but he's going to be a potential Hall of Famer. This guy is insanely talented. It's crazy how he is.
And he's 19. And I know that's why Braves fans love to compare him to Andrew Jones. And I think in a lot of ways, he's probably pretty similar, you know?
It makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. The problem is they won't be in the playoffs. But which player? We mentioned Green, McKay. You mentioned skipping my mind. The other top not McKay. The other big pitcher we were talking about.
McKenzie Gore.
Yes, McKenzie Gore. Which player in the draft this past year you think will be the first one that kind of makes an impact? Not the first one to appear in the bigs, first one to make an impact in the bigs.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a couple of guys that will probably be in the big leagues before those guys will. I think one of them, hitting-wise, the guy that I expect to get to the big leagues first and be an impact player sort of from the jump is Keston Hiura of the Brewers. He sort of doesn't really have a position. He's technically a second baseman, just got back to playing second base. But, you know, in college, he was one of the top hitters in the league. I believe it was, you know, Cal State Fullerton, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was Fullerton and not Santa Clara, but I'm pretty sure it was Fullerton. But it was one of the top, you know, hitters in the country in terms of on-base percentage, average. Has moderate power. I mean, he's not like a 25 homer guy, but the way homers have sort of played up in this era with minor league numbers and how they all of a sudden these huge spikes in power when these guys get to the majors, maybe that ticks up a little bit. But I think he has 15 to 20 homer pop. I think he's very similar to sort of a Dustin Pedroia in terms of what he can provide, you know, high batting average, really good on base percentage, maybe steals a few bases, less than Pedroia, but can steal a couple, maybe hits for a little bit more power than Pedroia. And he just got back to playing second base, only played three games this year at second on surgery. Supposedly he's over the elbow issue and was back in a throwing program. And he's feeling strong, best shape of his life, all that nonsense. But we'll see how he holds up as a hitter. I think he's the number one guy, first guy to make an impact. And I think the other guy is another advanced college hitter, probably the second best college hitter in the draft, and that's Kevin Smith from the Diamondbacks. I think there's an opportunity for him to come up and hit. I don't think he's going to be a superstar. You know, I think the superstars are going to come in the form of some of the prep bats, some of the high school bats that were in this draft. But I do think he could be a very good player, hitting in a good ballpark. And his athleticism might surprise some people. And if I'm going to throw it back to a pitcher, I'm going to say Kyle Wright, the big-time Vandy starter there, drafted by the Braves. I think this guy is ready-made. I don't think he's going to need much time in the minor leagues. And I think you could see him as early as next year. And the other arm I'll throw up, there's another big-time college guy coming out of the SEC, and that's Alex Viedo of the Tigers. He's somebody that had two knee issues. I think he actually had surgeries in the offseason. And he was really slow to recover from it this spring. But as he sort of went deeper into the year, it came to the College World Series. This guy really ramped it up. It was nasty. Carried it through to the professional ranks after getting drafted by the Tigers this year. And he looks like, you know, he might have been a little bit undersold. Sort of similar to A.J. Puck. It seems like there's a lot of prospect fatigue with some of these college pitchers. And they break them down so much that they don't necessarily look at the upside. And I think Fieto is another really good starting pitcher that the Tigers have hit on. They've had a couple in these last couple of drafts with Kyle Funkhauser. Obviously, had an arm issue, but another guy that they sort of plunked that seemed like he got a little bit of prospect fatigue. And another guy that's similar is Alex Hansen, that I think was, you know, pretty similar from the previous draft. He's just been phenomenal now with the White Sox.
Yeah, he's been really good. Fieto's really, really talented. Like you mentioned, the prospect fatigue, because Puck, he dropped so far in that draft. I know it wasn't far, but farther than he should have. And I got to watch him when he was out playing for Stockton in single A. He's so good. So good. Got a gold mine there. And then Kyle Wright, that's the name, the pitcher that comes to mind for me. I thought if he would have went to the right team in that first round, obviously, if you're picking towards the top, you're not usually in contention. But I thought he could have, need be, he was that ready to go. So that'll be real interesting to see there. What you mentioned for the D-backs, what position would he play? Because what I've heard is he's the next replacement for Goldschmidt, but Goldie's not leaving anytime soon.
Yeah, maybe they. I think he has the ability to play left field. So certainly better than some of the guys that they've trotted out there. They're, you know, this is the team that does start Yasmani Tomas from time to time when he's healthy in the outfield. So sure. They're not adverse to poor defense. I think he's a better defensive player and more athletic than Tomas. So I think he could play a little bit of left field if they really wanted him to. It'll be interesting to see what they do because I've heard that he worked out for a lot of teams, including the Phillies prior to this draft, in the outfield. So I think that's an interesting wrinkle. Hey, I wanted to mention two more players regarding guys that could have an impact next year. I think they should be mentioned together. But they're two starting pitchers, just to go back a little bit before we move on. And that's Brent Honeywell and Michael Kopech, two really exciting pitchers. A little bit different. Kopech is just the nasty fastball. Secondaries are coming along guy, but has like an 80 grade fastball, as good of a fastball as you've ever seen. And he loves baseball, kind of a maniac, but he's got the big attitude, goes after hitters. And he's made some tweaks in his mechanics, and he's really sort of reined in his control and been able to for strikes and the slider for strikes a lot more. And then there's Brent Honeywell of the Tampa Bay Rays, who's another interesting personality. He actually got suspended recently for 4 games going into the playoffs because he was tweeting out, retweeting every single person that tweeted him that he should be called up. And the Rays didn't take kindly to that. They suspended him for 4 games. Didn't matter to Honeywell, or Honey Bear, as I like to call him. He came back and he pitched his. I think Durham ended up winning the AAA championship, or if not, they're in the one game within the finals, right? If I'm not mistaken.
I know Memphis
won the PCL yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so there might still be another game left,
but Honeywell did pitch a gem in the playoffs. He's shown to be money. This guy has 6 pitches. I mean, an absolute ridiculous fastball with sink on it, 95, 96 miles an hour. Pairs that with an excellent changeup and another really nasty splitter. I don't know how his splitter compares to Ohtani, but it's damn good. I've seen it myself. Actually, I was at his worst start this year. I went and I took my son to go see him in Pawtucket, and he got blown up for like 8 runs. It was great.
Never fails.
Never.
Why did they not call him up this year? I've wondered that for quite a while.
They want to keep those clocks down, Tampa, and I think that guys having a winning environment, and they just wanted to keep this Durham team together because they certainly could have called up Willy Adames instead of trading for Hechavarria. And for some reason, why did they let Tim Beckham go? Why didn't they call up Honeywell? I mean, like, why wasn't Farrier in the rotation to begin the season? This team could have made the playoffs if they really wanted to, and they more or less made a choice not to. They had the players. They could have traded for JT Martinez. Right?
I mean, big time. The D-backs didn't give up anybody.
No. They could have traded away peripheral pieces like Casey Gillespie, who they ended up trading away. They could have traded away some of these guys, and they would have given the Tigers the same amount of return. And it's like they didn't even try. I was saying around the trade deadline, they should trade Chris Archer. And people got really mad at me, but I was like, guys, you're right. And then sure enough, like all of them came back to me in the last month. They're like, yeah, we really should have traded Archer. I was like, yeah, now that he has elbow problems and no one's going to want to touch him and he's another few months older. Yeah. You should have traded him to the Dodgers. You would have gotten Willie Calhoun. He could have played second base for you. And you could have called up Honeywell and still made the playoffs, but that's another story.
Yeah. The Rays killed me. I picked him as my dark horse to make the playoffs before the season. And people questioned me and, I'm the same way you are. They had the pieces to do it. But whoever's sitting in that office making the final decision, I don't know which guy it is making the wrong one, obviously. It's unbelievable.
The Beckham one kills me. The Beckham one kills me because they just traded him away for no reason to go and get a Hechavarria? What?
Yeah, they traded him for next to nothing, too. That was the worst part.
Yeah. They got, like, spare parts back for him. I'm almost mad. It's too bad. They traded him in the division.
That's the worst.
Because it would have been better if the Red Sox tried to trade for him. I don't think the Rays would trade with the Red Sox, but they traded him within the division, and he continued to hit. So it's just it was just a baffling bunch of moves. They could have called up Adames as well. I think Jake Bowers could have been part of their platoons in the outfield. Yeah, that's a team that should – they have all the pieces to be a good real-life baseball team, and it's almost like they consciously made a choice to delay it a year when they really shouldn't have, and they should have gone all out because the market was ripe for them to pick.
Yeah, and now you're going to lose Archer, so it's going to be a whole interesting situation there. Another guy, since you mentioned a couple more that I'm curious about, Nick Senzel of the Cincinnati Reds. His name's on the tip of a lot of people's tongues. He can rake. When can we expect him?
Yeah, as long as he gets over this bout of vertigo that ended his season, that's actually why he's not playing. I think there was an opportunity for him to even get a call up here in September, but the end of August, he went out with it. You know, sometimes you see these things where guys are sick, and it's just a day or two, and, you know, it's like they got the flu or a cold or something, and it passes. Well, it turned out to be something that was obviously somewhat serious, and, I don't think it's going to be anything that haunts him long term. I believe I've known some people that have had it and so sort of gotten over it. I don't know much about vertigo personally, but I assume he'll be healthy and ready to go next spring. And it's totally possible he gets called up really early, like May or June. I mean, I know they got Eugenio Suarez at third, but I guess they move him over to second. I mean, I don't know, because Senzel is going to be the third baseman of the future. I don't think there's much doubt to that. There's a guy that can hit right off the bat, and I think in terms of what he comps to very favorably is Alex Bregman, very similar sort of hitter.
It's a good comp. Okay, one last question. You can do it a little rapid fire for us. Just give me your top five farm systems, because I like to see who each person has, because they're a little different usually, but sometimes the same. So just give me your top five.
All right, I'm going to rank the White Sox first, Braves two, and it's like 1A, 1B. I just think that the high end of the White Sox, I just like a little bit more, especially from a fantasy perspective. Though then again, if you're removing Moncada, it's the Braves.
Yeah.
The dark horse in all this, to me, number three is the Padres. I love the Padres. I'm a huge AJ Preller fanboy. His last couple of signing classes have been phenomenal. This draft was great. He absolutely stole Fernando Tatis Jr., who's going to end up being a top 10 prospect in my updated end of season top 100 rankings. I mean, this guy is awesome. They got him for James Shields. The corpse of James Shields somehow reaped this guy the return of a top 10 prospect, a shortstop at that with major power and bloodlines. Because he's like 6'4", he's like bigger than his dad. I mean, he's probably going to end up at third base long term. But right now, I mean, he's mashing. He's like a, 30 home run power and like 30 steal speed. I mean, he's a really interesting prospect. I love him. And they have, Mackenzie Gore that they added to the fold. Lots of other players. Tons of guys in the lower minors. They have like shortstops on top of shortstops. They had so many teams. I believe they actually had to have two Arizona League teams this year to accommodate all their players. And they got Michael Baez, who's one of my favorite prospects in the minors. Big 6'8 Cuban guy that they signed, throws high 90 velocity in a fastball, has an excellent changeup that I've actually seen ranked as the best pitch in the Midwest League, not just in that great rotation that it features Adrian Morhan and some other really talented arms, but in that entire league, which is a very talented league. I love the Padres. I think they could be the number one system in baseball once some of these Braves get called up. And once some people get over some of these arms, once Acuna's out of that picture, I think I could have even picked the Padres. Another team I love what they've been doing the last couple of drafts and how they've been building, and that's the Cincinnati Reds. They've had a couple of excellent drafts. You're talking about Senzel. We talked about Hunter Green. They also have another prospect that I love, might even like fantasy-wise more than either of them in terms of his ceiling, and that's Taylor Trammell. Was a football first kid. Was, I think, state player or an all-pro player in Georgia. Was a five-star football recruit, chose baseball, went in the supplemental round to them in 2016, and he's showing off power, speed sort of skill set. Could be a serious riser on top 100 list next year. And they have, this seems like, a ton of arms right now that are coming up. Luis Castillo is a guy they traded for that was sort of off the radar, and you've seen how good he's been. He's been sort of phenomenal down the stretch here, and they've shut him down. They've been smart with him. And I guess they're going to throw down the end number five, is the Yankees. I like what they've done. You have to understand how they sort of blanket the market with these lower minor guys. They have people like Esteban Florial, who came into this year somewhat unheralded. I've been really high on him for a while now. I love Floreal's skill set. You know, that, he's a guy that they plucked out of Haiti. I mean, they sort of find these guys in random spots. They get another guy, Dermis Garcia, who's a massive power on base guy. That's really interesting. And then all the guys that are in the higher minors there that you know about, Chance Adams and the like. So, you know, I like what the Yankees have done. They still have Gleyber Torres in that system, you know, who will be back next year coming off of that Tommy John, his non-throwing arm, and that freak accident home plate. And I still think it's still a very strong system. They draft well as well. Like I said, they're usually very active in the signing market. And I guess if they signed Ohtani, technically he'd be a prospect, and that would certainly boost that system stock even more. But the Yankees have done a good job the last few years of sort of building internally. So I give them a lot of props.
Yeah, those are five you can't argue with. There's a lot of good stuff there. I love what you said about the Padres, because people overlook them because it's not the, you know, who's helping us tomorrow names. These guys are on single A, low A. Some have creeped into double A this year. So it's a lot of names we're not going to see for a few years, but the talent pool is rich with that lower level in San Diego that if they keep doing it the right way, eventually could be very, very nice. All right, Ralph. We covered a lot. I appreciate all of it. Really, really good stuff. Any final words?
No, I appreciate it. Thanks. Thanks for having me on. This is fun. I love talking prospects anytime I can. And certainly, you can hit me on Twitter at Prospect Jesus. Razzball. My prospect posts on Razzball come out Thursdays and Sundays. I've been doing top 10 positional ranks of the top 10 prospects for 2018 in each position. I've already gone through shortstop, starting pitcher, third base, outfield, second base. I'm going to be doing first base and catcher, and then probably moving on to my system. What I do is actually in the off season is I actually go through every single system in the minors and talk about the top 15 to 20 sort of fantasy players and do a little paragraph blurb on each. So there's a lot to be written, all 30 systems. And then I do the pitching ranks and a pitching profile where I actually go sort of pitch by pitch, inning by inning, with GIFs included of starting pitchers and all their different offerings and pitches that they throw. So I'm busy a lot, and I also do a little fan track show. I've been doing live show on Tuesday nights during the season with Andy Singleton, who was formerly of Nickel Press TV. Now does all fan tracks video work, and that's been a lot of fun. It's called The Baseball Show. You can go look at the archives. I think we're going to bring it back after the World Series. Don't really have a whole lot of fantasy stuff to talk about, but we typically do a lot of off-season breaking down players going into 2018, so we'll be doing some of that. So I got a lot of different ways you can hit me. Oh, and I also have my own podcast, if I can mention that. It's the Razzball Prospect Podcast with Michael Halpern.
Awesome. Busy man. I like it. I like it. A lot of good stuff. Yeah, peruse his articles and everything. Lots of good stuff to like there. I'll link the Ohtani article in this deal so you guys can find that real easy. But, yeah, follow him on Twitter, at Prospect Jesus. You'll get everything right there for the most part. But, Ralph, again, man, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, bud.
Everybody, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 56, with Ralph Lipschitz of Razzball.com talking prospects, Shohei Ohtani, and more. We'll catch you guys next time.
Life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote? Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.